This is the Winston Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 22nd of April 2022. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our editors this week are Liz and Gordon Legg, and our readers are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. And so we'll begin with the usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive her recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. Contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And don't forget, as you listen to the recordings, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks that you might want to listen to again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using the memory stick in your box, you can access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. Recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. Now, our headline stories this week are Delhi reopens following major refurbishment, anger over Hyde pigeon problem, lockdown the final nail in the coffin, and tributes after death of Winchester lollipop lady. So, Ros, could we have the first headline news item, please?
Yes, the heading is, excuse me, Delhi reopens following major refurbishment. A cafe and eco-friendly retail store has reopened its doors with a new look after a major refurbishment. The Open House Deli in Middlebrook Street has recently been completed in the stylish manner of a corner post office building. It has also seen Bespoke Biking, who they once shared the building with, has moved next door. The independent business has been run by Rebecca Smith since it reopened in 2019, after initially starting on a market stall. She said, "I'm so proud of the upgrade. I started a market store 4 years ago on Winchester High Street, so to get into a place where I have a space like this by myself makes me feel so proud. I have a corporate background, but I've always been involved with food, and I just decided that there was such a gap in the market in Winchester for somewhere that is quick and on the go, yet everything is still homemade from scratch. The cafe is open from 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m, 7 days a week."
Thank you, Ros. Richard, please.
Anger over Hyde pigeon problem. Winchester civic chiefs have spent thousands of pounds trying and failing to deter pigeons from a historic monument. Local residents are getting angry that the city council has spent the money at Hyde Abbey Gate in Hyde without success. A council statement said, "We can confirm we've spent £25,000 on the gateway, which includes pigeon protection works, a detailed structural conditions survey, and the services of a landscape architect to develop proposals for public realm at Hyde Abbey Gateway." The local resident Julian Perkins of Hyde Gate said, "It's a total scandal. There used to be netting which sorted the problem for years. It was totally bird-proof. I've been told the council has spent £25,000 trying to get rid of the birds. Apparently the netting was not considered aesthetically pleasing." Local City Councillor John Tibbet Cooper said, "I'm told that attempts to remove pigeons from a space in this context is a bit of a trial and error process. The solution installed by the pest contractors to remove the pigeons from Hyde Gate is intended to be a long-term solution and is partly working, but not fully yet, which is really frustrating. Edward Fennell, founder of Hyde 900, who wants the gate to be converted into a heritage venue, said, "Like other Hyde residents, I was disappointed that Winchester City Council's successive attempts to purge Hyde Gate of scores of pigeons had failed despite significant expenditure. It reflected, frankly, a woefully poor analysis of what was going wrong. However, in fairness to the contractors, they've been brought back and in the past week now appear to have come up with a solution, installing wire fencing positioned so as to make it almost impossible for the pigeons to perch on top of the walls." How difficult could it be? "Getting rid of the pigeons, however, barely scratches the surface of the squalor in Hyde Gate. The wasting of the fabric of the building, the appalling state of the floor areas, and the general state of dereliction is an embarrassment, especially when visitors turn up intrigued by the Hyde Abbey story, only to be disappointed by what they discover. There is enormous historical and architectural potential in this Grade 1 listed building. Local councillors are now making vague promises about their intentions for development, but specific plans have yet to be revealed. The Friends of Hyde Gate, along with the Hyde 900, the Friends of Hyde Garden, and the Parish of St Bartholomew are all keen to collaborate with WCC to turn the precincts of Hyde Abbey into a marvellous heritage and educational venue."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Lockdown, the final nail in coffin. An independent shop in Winchester is closing after 22 years, with lockdown blamed as the final nail in the retail coffin. Haywood Guitars on Stockbridge Road is shutting on May the 31st after sales plummeted and with rent increases. Owner Brian Haywood said, "Lockdown was the final nail in the retail coffin. Everyone has got used to buying online, or at the very least, trying something in a shop, then buying it online. The days of the little independents are well and truly gone. Sales have been awful this year. People come in and look at the price and think, 'I can get this cheaper online.' But the fact is, online guitars come out of the warehouse and they haven't been touched by human hands and they're not playable. So a lot of my work is setting up guitars that people have bought online that don't work. So in that respect, it's a bit of a false economy." Brian, who's 59, has prepared his future by building a workshop at home in Winchester, where he says his biggest income comes from. He said, "I've got to the point where I think, how much longer can I do this before I go completely mad? Building a business over 22 years, which started as a hobby, is quite an achievement, but you get to a point where it's more grief and not a lot of return. Going back some years, I thought this is going to go a bit wrong, so I built a little workshop at home, as it's not viable for me to keep this place going with bills going up. So really, I just need workshop space to work. So I'm closing the retail side and moving the workshop to my new workshop. I'm okay about closing. I've seen it coming and have had time to plan. So it's not all bad. It's been great. I've met loads of nice people, lots of customers, and loads of work. But really, the business can't exist with just one part of the business. It's all loss for retail, but at one point, there were 5 music shops in Winchester, but you can't keep it going with rent, rates, and a lack of footfall." He was also critical of the Business Improvement District, which works to improve the trading environment for its 900 members. "The BID take my money, and that is all they do. When you do have a problem, they do absolutely nothing. Executive Director of the BID, Dr. Paul Spencer, said, "Stockbridge Road will not be the same without Hayward guitars. I brought my first guitar, or I bought it, from Brian Hayward as a teenager many years ago, and the shop will be greatly missed. For questions about guitar repairs, you can call Brian on 073-791-39307 or email info@haywoodguitars.com. The guitar shop currently has a sale on."
Thank you, Claire. Our last headline story is tributes after death of Winchester Lollipop Lady. Tributes have been paid following the death of one of the best-known faces in Winchester. Margaret Cole, 92, was for 40 years, until 2014, the Lollipop Lady on Stanmore Lane, helping thousands of children on their way to and from school. She was also a dedicated supporter of the Royal British Legion. In a Facebook post, the Friends of St Luke and St Mark said, "We are saddened to hear of the passing of Margaret Cole, MBE, aged 92. She was the Lollipop Lady for Stanmore School for many years. She worshipped at St Luke's. She was awarded her MBE for services to the local community. She was standard bearer of Winchester branch of the Royal British Legion Women's Section for many years and a proud supporter of the Royal British Legion Poppy Appeal. A friend to many and would be sadly missed. Funeral arrangements to follow." Many people have paid tribute on social media. Ruth Gibb posted, "So sad to hear this, always smiling, and the children loved her." Victoria Stainer said, "Rest in peace, Margaret. You will be sadly missed by so many. Thank you for keeping all of us that attend Stanmore School safe every day. The best Lollipop Lady that we could wish for." City MP Steve Bryan posted, "Sorry to hear this. I met Margaret a few times in the course of my work. A lovely lady." On her retirement in 2014, she told the Chronicle, "I have thoroughly enjoyed my 40 years. I had a lovely tea party and had the most beautiful cake. I had 1.5 hours training when I started, that's all. But now my eyesight is beginning to wane, and it's a shame really, because it's the only reason that I'm retiring." Mrs. Cole of Green Jacket Close Stanmore said that she would miss seeing the children every day and getting her daily exercise. "I'll miss just walking up and down Stanmore Lane and seeing my little darlings," she added. "They have been fantastic, and the little ones in pushchairs always try to hold my hand. I've absolutely enjoyed it." The school head teacher, Justin Brooks, said, "The whole school community has really appreciated Mrs. Cole taking care of so many children over the years. We will all really miss her, and we wish her a long and happy retirement." Now, that was a comment from 2014. And now we have the death notices, starting with Ros, please.
Cobden. Wendy Cobden passed away peacefully on 8th of April 2022.
As we've already heard, Cole, Margaret McGibbon Cole, MBE, remembered for her long service as Lollipop Lady at Stanmore School, passed away peacefully on the 9th of April 2022, aged 92 years.
Corn, Reverend Ronald Andrew Cole, passed away suddenly on the 29th of March after a short illness, aged 70 years.
Dean, John Edward Dixie Dean, passed away peacefully on the 28th of March 2022, aged 88 years.
Dunford, Joan née Thompson Dunford, passed away suddenly on the 8th of April 2012, aged 95 years.
Grace, Malcolm Herbert Patrick Grace, passed away peacefully at York Hospital on the 5th of April, aged 83 years.
Thirlwall, Clive Allen Thirlwall, known as Clive, passed away suddenly but peacefully on the 7th of April 2022, aged 70 years.
Thank you. Now we're going to work Claire hard again because we go back to her for Christian comment, please.
This is headed Gravity and Grace. Gravity and grace are, according to the writer Simone Weil, two deep patterns in human life. Weil said that most of the natural behaviour of the soul is governed by laws like spiritual gravity, a familiar, tragic cycle of human life. Human desires, especially the desire for power and control, cause conflict. Conflict causes violent emotions. Violence causes trauma. Trauma causes anger and the desire for revenge. This cycle seems at first unbreakable, not so much what comes up must come down as what goes down a bit must keep going down. But according to Weil, set against gravity there is grace. Grace follows different laws. It sits lightly to its own desires. It sets aside the desire for power and control. When there is conflict, it seeks reconciliation. In fact, it is prepared to show self-sacrificing love to bring conflicts to an end. The events of Good Friday, which Christians remembered last week, seems all too normal an example of gravity. Someone threatened the power of the elite. He was crushed. So life goes. But Christians also remember a different scene. The women who had followed Jesus going with spices to anoint his body. To them it seemed like grace tried its best, but gravity was too much for it. Jesus had preached a way of peace and self-sacrificing love, and he had followed it through to die in pain without worldly dignity under a darkened sky. He went up in grace, but gravity brought him down dead. But on Easter morning, the women did not find the body of Jesus. Why not? Well, in a sense, it is obvious. If Jesus is who he says he is, who he's revealed himself to be, then he is too powerful a spiritual force for that heavy rock which sealed the tomb to contain, too powerful for Pilate and the high priests and scribes to kill off, too powerful for the forces of gravity to keep down. Instead, they find the empty tomb and a vision like angels asking them, "Why are you looking for the risen among the dead?" That's what we must ask ourselves. If we see that grace does in the end have a power which gravity lacks. In Eastern Europe, in the time of communism, one town council held a meeting to dissuade people from continuing their Christian faith. The councillors pitted their best speaker against the local Orthodox priest. The communist spoke first, and he spoke better. He gave a long analysis. Jesus had been an ordinary man with radical ideas, deserving honour, perhaps as the first communist. There was a measure of applause. Then came the turn of the senior priest of the town. He rose, made the sign of the cross, and stood for a time silently facing the crowd. Then he pronounced the ancient Easter greeting, "Christos Voskris," Christ is risen. Without a moment's hesitation, the crowd swayed towards him with the reply, Voice tenu, voice Chris. He is risen indeed. Christ is risen, the priest repeated, twice more. And the responses came back, by the third time, absolutely thunderous. The priest waited, then asked simply, What more is there to say? Let us go to our homes. The meeting is over. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Alleluia. And that was written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who's rector, parish of St. Faith.
Thank you, Claire. Now, excuse me, we move on to letters to the editor, and usually there are only 7 letters this week. We usually have a lot more than that, so I don't know what is happening to the people of Winchester, but they are not writing letters to the Chronicle. Anyway, let's have the first one from Ros, please.
Yes, it's entitled, Why the Need to Still Book a Tip? I am curious to know why we still have to book an appointment to deposit waste on the council site under requirements that have not been updated since June, possibly 2021. Could be 2020. The website doesn't specify. I notice that the present government guidelines encourage us to let the fresh air in and ventilation. Well, the last time I checked, the tip wasn't an indoor facility. This raises points. A. To what extent has fly tipping increased since the booking scheme has been in place? And B. Whether other temporary COVID requirements will be left in place to the detriment of the public. It seems that as the moments roll by, we'll find a lot of new normal requirements will limit the previous levels of access to a number of services. For the record, I am triple vaccinated, use LFT regularly, and am still more than happy to wear a mask in indoor situations. So, not a COVID denier. And that's from M. Smith of Christchurch Road, Winchester.
Thank you. Richard, please.
Yes, and this comes from Jill Prince, who's complaining about campaign letters. Prominent politicians are very quick to pose beside the Union flag and a photograph of Her Majesty the Queen. It's a shame they are less keen on following her advice. Speak well of each other, respect different points of view, come together to seek the common good, and never lose sight of the bigger picture. Recently, we've seen election campaign leaflets which accuse one party of hypocrisy, public posturing, and making disingenuous claims. What would Her Majesty make of that? These leaflets are also scaremongering, wrongly claiming that huge numbers of houses are to be built in Winchester. On February the 10th, you printed an editorial entitled Twisting the Truth for Electoral Gain. You obviously are aware of how easy it is to mislead the electorate. The Diva Society had to try to correct the false information, but once the idea is planted, it can be hard to get people to accept the truth. Feelings are running high, and some may actually believe the things they write or read are factual. As we approach the final weeks of the local election campaign, I'm asking you not to print any letters of a political nature. By far the best way to deal with the situation is not to publish letters from MPs, councillors, candidates or their supporters on April the 21st, April the 28th or May the 5th. Jill Prince, Linway, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Richard. Claire.
This letter is headed Double Candidate. I refer to the article headed Two Ward Council Candidate Criticised. That was the Chronicle on April the 14th. in which you rightly drew the public's attention to the fact that the independent candidate standing in the Southwick and Wickham ward elections for Winchester City Council on May the 5th is, in fact, already a councillor on Portsmouth City Council. It must be very alarming for voters in the Southwick and Wickham ward to be informed by the independent candidate that my number one priority is Paulsgrove in Portsmouth, and that won't change if I'm elected to Winchester City Council. Many voters, myself included, who live in the Southwick and Wickham ward are affronted that their issues and concerns will have low importance from the outset by this candidate. Voters deserve a candidate who can devote 100% of their free time, without any other council responsibilities, to helping and supporting the needs of the residents of the Southwick and Wickham ward. As the Conservative candidate standing in that ward, I am proud to give that pledge. And that was written by Sandy Phillips Lee, Conservative candidate for Southwick and Wickham ward, WCC, Charity View, Knowle.
Thank you, Claire. I've got a letter that's written by Danny Lee. It's headed Top of the Agenda. Winchester City Council elections are on May the 5th, 2022. Too often, local politicians say that no one ever asked them about climate change. We need every political party to put action on the climate at the top of their agenda. Let's make it clear that the climate crisis must be the priority for all our elected representatives, local as well as national. When people knock on our door to ask for our vote, remind them that the climate emergency is far too important to be a party political football. Then ask them some of these questions on the doorstep or online. 1. The climate emergency is much more important than party politics. Are you prepared to work together with the other parties on this, regardless of who wins the election? 2. What will you do to reduce traffic blight, particularly in the city? Cars are bad for trade, our lungs, and the climate. How will you improve rural bus services? 3. How will your council help businesses to create green jobs and green their businesses? 4. What will you do to encourage homeowners to make their homes more efficient, energy efficient? 5. What nature-based improvements will the council support to help address the climate emergency? And 6. How is your council going to persuade national government to put its money where its mouth is? For instance, to shift spending from roads to public transport, to transfer subsidies from fossil fuels to renewables. That was written by Danny Lee, who is trustee, Winchester Action on Climate Crisis, Main Campus, University of Winchester, Sparkford Road, Winchester.
This next letter is from Phil Yates, and it's headed War Memories. I refer to the article in the Chronicle, April the 14th, headlined Hampshire Under Attack in World War II, showing photos of inter alia, the Home Guard, doing their bit. This reminds me of the Bevan boys doing their bit working on the coal mines up and down the country, helping to get coal out to the pits. On the first attendance at the Remembrance Day service, I'm sorry about that, in Whitehall in November 1995, the Royal British Legion were asked to give us assistance. There came none. We asked the Home Guard platoon immediately in front of us, and they replied, "What was the drill?" "Just follow us, lads, and we'll help you." And this they did. We were eternally grateful to them and met up with them following remembrance services in Whitehall. The Bevan Boys Association secretary, Vivienne Slater, MBE, travelled down from Stoke-on-Trent by coach through the night to get to Whitehall in time to bring with her the remembrance book of those Bevan boys who had died. By a strange coincidence, Viv was, as she's still known to her, by us all, rang me last week for a chat about the old days when we met at reunions from 1993 until a few years ago. Happy days. Not down the pits, naturally. Oh, yes, we did our job. And although we were one of the forgotten armies of the Second World War. That was from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Ros. Richard?
Park home crisis. In these times of hardship, we need airtime and media coverage to shame government into giving park home owners in England what they promised 4 years ago. And we need it before the Queen's speech on May the 10th. I am a member of the Park Homeowners Justice Campaign. In 2014, many pensioners travelled to London to present our petition to Downing Street. One of the things we petitioned for was to change the increase of our monthly pitch fees from RPI to CPI. Pensioners' pensions only increase by CPI. 4 years ago, the government promised to make this change, which is already enjoyed by park home residents in Wales. We're still waiting, but government appears not to want to honour their promise. To help us, Sir Christopher Chope MP has, to no avail, on several occasions put forward his own private member's bill on the subject of RPI. Our founder, Sonia McCall, has been informed by Sir Christopher that he has now persuaded the minister to take action in the new session of Parliament. We're grateful to Sir Christopher for this, and I believe that their intervention, along with the hundreds of letters that park homeowners have sent, has brought about these statements. This is definitely the power of the people working, and you have all done so well. But what is some action? In these austere times, when park homeowners, who are pensioners mainly, struggle to pay for heating and food, this present government is failing them badly by not having activated their promise. RPI is at an all-time high, and the difference between this and CPI is extremely significant to those with little income who struggle to keep warm. Does the RPI that is added to the go to the government? No, it's added to already extortionate pitch fees and is a windfall gain for the site owner on a monthly basis, which is laughing all the way to the bank. We, the Justice Campaign, have tried and done all that we can. Now we need to press home to government how desperate we are. Joseph Paglia, Avondale Park, Colon Common.
Thank you for that one, Richard. Now, Claire, please.
This letter from Edward Chase is headed Solar Power. I expect James Anderson, Chronicle Letters, April the 7th, like most people, has a car that sits at his home and or workplace doing nothing around 96% of the time, RAC figure. But it is convenient to own one and cost-effective compared with the alternatives like taxis or public transport. We're not going to deny someone their car because it is driven so little. Likewise, solar panels may have intermittent output, as he says, but overall, it's now very cost-effective and quick to build compared with, say, a nuclear power station or tidal barrage. So it has a more immediate impact on our currently high prices and dire energy security. It's not the only answer. Thus, we need a mix of new generation and storage, none of which are without some environmental or visual drawbacks. Often, wind turbine output is high when solar is low, so they complement themselves quite well. but UK is short of solar generation compared with wind turbines. Placing solar panels in a desert, as he suggests, has all sorts of drawbacks, like no rain to wash the dust off them, high operating temperatures lowering output, erosion in sandstorms, and high day-to-night temperatures cycling that degrades them. Thus, they do not last well after an initial high output. On a large scale, they adversely affect global warming due to their absorbing more sun than sand does. In the UK, they are more matched to the solar absorption of fields. It is all not as simple as Mr. Anderson thinks. The war in Ukraine, not a special military operation, Mr. Putin, has showed us that local energy production and fuel supply is a good thing for national security. And what could be more local to Winchester than Hedburnworthy Parish or Alsford, NIMBY? Not here, so not necessarily so secure. Less solar ignorance, please. Edward Chase, M.A., Cantab, Hinton Fields, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Claire. Well, that concludes our letters to the editor. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the letter, to the... Write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester. Right, now we move on to editorial comment, which is read by Richard, please.
Which is a tribute to Margaret Cole, Lollipop Lady. The Hampshire Chronicle felt it should give space to join the many people who have paid tribute to Margaret Cole from Stanmore, who's died aged 92. The Chronicle and other local papers were fortunate to speak to Margaret many times over the years, often in her role as Lollipop Lady for Lower Stanmore Lane. It was a job she undertook every school day, rain and shine, with constant good humour for 40 years, shepherding children across a busy road and ensuring the safety of literally thousands of youngsters. For 28 years, she was the standard bearer for the Royal British Legion in Winchester. Her work for the community led to the award of an MBE, and never was such an honour more richly deserved. People like Margaret do what they do not to seek public praise or recognition, but because they are driven by the desire simply to be of service. Winchester is full of such people, and in paying tribute to Margaret Cole, we salute them all.
Thank you, Richard. Now we have the opinion piece, which this week is written by Joanna Lewis. As I write, there's a wonderful warmth in the weather. Nature is starting to put on a show. Yellow blooms seem to be in abundance this year. Sunshine bites, radiating a warm glow. This is just as well, for where I am right now, it's a crisis. The central heating has to go off. The problem is I'm a 21 degrees Celsius girl to the bone. I may be 14% Viking, according to my DNA profile, but all this means is that I like a good bonfire, and I'm very partial to a fur throw. It's certainly not translated into a love of the cold, let alone a toleration of it, but... Farewell, 21 degrees. I have loved thee too well. Europe's reliance on Russian energy is helping to pay for Putin's sordid war. Household gas and electricity bills are rising by an eye-boggling 50%. Meanwhile, climate change continues apace, as living costs rise. Over a third of households are already using less gas and electricity. The impact on poorer households and the elderly will be disastrous. We must, if we can, change our habits. So, what is a national light bulb moment? Sorry, is my personal nightmare. Call me weird, but I love a radiator. I think they're one of the most underrated modern inventions and a benchmark of civilizations. It's the main reason why I adore the Romans. Not only have they given us the gift of straight roads and Russell Crowe getting stroppy in a leather miniskirt, they actually invented central heating, for goodness sake. I remember the horror stories my parents told me of their childhood winters. Bedrooms so cold that occupants would have to break the ice on the jug of water. Bedrooms that had dirty, draughty fireplaces. Yikes! My sleepovers with my grandparents confirmed this barbarity. How quickly the novelty of the Edwardian interior, a mixed fruit trifle, and Grandad's trick with the handkerchief would all be forgotten as you scrambled into your pyjamas before frostbite set in. The very thought of returning to that kind of cold is chilling. But what bothers me most is not the sudden ending of a lifetime of 21 degrees indoors. Sure, the indoors perma t-shirt, cotton leggings and bare feet will all have to go. The forest of exotic plants that don't regularly fruit certainly won't like it. It's a whole lifestyle change, and I accept that for 6 months of the year I will now look like a lagged tank. Put simply, we all have to become like posh people who have big houses but never put the heating on. And smell damp. But what's far more irksome is the bigger picture. The new downward-facing dial means defeat in a big battle of the sexes. How many times have I wondered why my nose feels like it's turning blue, only to discover the boyfriend turned the heating down? The scenario always ends the same. I turn it up again. Himself tuts disapprovingly. He then walks around in his undercrackers while fanning himself. Oh dear, I'll try and carry on. This new battle cry is heat the person, not the home. So, how to get fighting fit? Well, activating my inner fire via Wim Hof style Iceman boot camp is too hideous a thought, or wild swimming. I don't want to be a burden on the NHS. But what's this? The Low Tech magazine. Its logo features an Iron Man holding a spear. Nice. Can its article, Restoring the Old Ways of Warming, save the situation? Insulated furniture, including giant leather chairs with hoods, four-poster beds with curtains, and sitting inside a fireplace. Also, portable foot warmers, a cooked potato popped into your pocket, heating bricks, and using brass bedpans. Well, if you don't want to turn your home into a Georgian theme park, try instead the heating and energy conservation tips on Martin Lewis's money-saving website. No relation. Well, after that very amusing piece from Joanna Lewis, we move on to Belgarum, which, as you probably know, is an alternative look at the news. Starting with Ros, please.
Yes. Parking spaces going to waste, says Belgarum. The new multi-storey car park has opened off Barfield Close in Barend. Not without some controversy, the structure provides these 287 parking spaces. Belgarum has wondered why several spaces at the new structure are marked for local residents who have lived on Bar End Road and whose back gardens above Barfield Close, because just 100 yards up the street, This is the former goodshed of the Southampton to Newbury Railway. It has a number of spaces earmarked for parking. For some time, they have been fenced off, although in recent weeks the fencing has been knocked over. Would it have been simpler to have earmarked the unused sheds at the goods shed for the local residents and kept the new structure for commuters? This would have been saving on paint, making out the spaces for local residents, and the future of the Victorian goods shed has been uncertain, with plans on the stage to open a business startup centre there to encourage young graduates to stay in the city. The idea was dropped and its future is still up in the air. We ask the City Council more than once about the thinking behind it, and we haven't had a reply.
Oh, shame. Claire, our second item from Belgaren, please.
This is headed A Corrosive Secrecy. Freedom of information is the lifeblood of democracy. Secrecy is a cancer. So Belgaren is growing worried by the new tendency for city council candidates to withhold their home addresses from public documents. The rules have changed to allow them to do so. It is a backward step. For the record, 10 Green candidates out of 12 have limited their details to an address in Winchester. 6 Conservatives out of 15, 2 Labour out of 15, and 1 Independent. Only the 15 Liberal Democrats have all disclosed where they live. Some people may ask, why is it important that these details are available? The question itself is rather depressing. The reason it is important is so that the electors can make a full and informed choice at the election. There are many scenarios why it may be important. The obvious one is the candidate local to the ward? There are lots of others. Belgaren asked Labour, the Conservatives and Greens for the reasons why their candidates are being secretive. Only Labour replied. One Green candidate privately said it was to protect families from being targeted and equated a candidate with a reporter, saying the journalist would not want their address revealed. Perhaps it needs to be explained that a reporter is not attempting to control the spending of millions of pounds of public money and be paid out of the public purse. In a statement, Labour said, Winchester Labour Party is very conscious of the hideous events of recent years, such as the murder of Joe Cox and David Amos, which have caused politicians at national and local level to check their personal security. This is the reason why, with the increasing violence seen towards politicians, candidates are able to omit their home address on the ballot paper for their own safety. The new system allows for voters to see if their candidate lives locally while also providing security to candidates. There should be no expectation of or right to privacy, and equating a council candidate with shocking political murders is overblown. The Chronicle acknowledges the abuse that some people, especially women, suffer, invariably from misogynists. This newspaper has publicly called for the lid to be lifted on people hiding behind anonymity on the internet, the main source of abuse. But the abuse by pathetic people is not sufficient reason for secrecy, and the erosion of information that has always been in the public domain. For the record, these are the candidates withholding their addresses. The split between male and female is around 50-50. Ironically, some have had their addresses on the Chronicle letters page. Right. Greens, Lucinda Graham, Max Priesman, Richard Cannon, Jenny Dixon, Julia Stoll, Rhys Chadwick, Charlotte Harvey, Giles Gooding, Richard Needham, and Robert Parker. Conservatives, Lorraine Bailey, Andy Lai, Sam Feltham, Leo Keogh, Sydney Biddle, Rennie Liu. Labour, Stephanie Harvey, Stephen Turner. Independent, George Madwick.
Thank you, Claire. Now we move on to some what's on items, starting with Roz, please. Yes.
I've got Chamber Festival. Tickets are still on sale for a chamber music festival in Winchester. Winchester Chamber Music Festival is taking place from April the 28th to May the 1st. The festival will be resident throughout the weekend at St Paul's Church, and the artists can return to the Theatre Royal, Winchester, for the Saturday evening gala concert, where they will be joined by Winchester Camerata, enabling some larger scale performances. Bookings for all events can be made via www.winchesterchambermusic.com, and in person and by phone to the Theatre Royal box office.
Thank you. Richard, please.
Yes, and there's going to be a show of bookmarks. A grandmother from the Meon Valley is planning to put her 1,000-plus bookmark collection on show to raise money for a charity that's helped her granddaughter. Jill Thirkelson from Bishop's Waltham started her bookmark collection over 40 years ago, and it's been unintentionally growing ever since. Jill said, "I never meant to start collecting them. When my three children went on school trips, they'd buy me bookmarks with their pocket money. Then the rest of my friends and family started doing the same when they travelled, and now I've had bookmarks bought for me from everywhere. My family definitely support me, and I think they find it very amusing." Jill's collection even includes bookmarks from North Korea and Thailand, with one of the oddest being made from dried elephant dung.
Oh, nice!
One of her most sentimental bookmarks was cross-stitched by her 102-year-old mother. When Jill reached 1,000 bookmarks, she decided to hold an exhibition for her quirky collection in order to raise money for a charity close to her heart. She said, "I want people to enjoy my odd collection. At the moment, they're all together in a big box, and I don't have them on display at home." Making a donation isn't a requirement, although happily welcomed. She's raising money for the Rainbow Trust, a charity that supports families who have a child aged 0 to 18 years with a life-threatening or terminal illness. She said, "My four-year-old granddaughter, Eleanor, has a very rare genetic disorder, where there are only 300 cases worldwide. It is not, as far as we know, life-limiting, but she has significant and complex needs. The trauma for families with disabled children is immense. So it's with this in mind that we would like to support this charity." The exhibition is being held at the King's Church Hall in Bishop's Waltham on May the 28th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Hot drinks, homemade cakes and biscuits will be on sale during the viewing, and everything raised is going towards the charity. Jill said, "Apart from the fact that we'd like to raise funds, we also want to make it an event of interest for the village. It is truly a wonderful and amazing collection of bookmarks from friends, family, strangers and friends of friends and so on, from wide and far throughout the world. And many of them have stories attached to them."
Richard, Claire, please.
This is headed Royal Art on Show for Jubilee. Andy Warhol's pop art print of the Queen and the famous Armada portrait of Elizabeth I are to go on show in a Jubilee exhibition of artworks depicting the queens who have ruled throughout history. The unprecedented display at Sotheby's in London will showcase paintings of each of the seven queens regnants who were crowned in their own right, stretching from Tudor times to the Platinum Jubilee age of Elizabeth II. The portrayal of Elizabeth I is described by Sotheby's as one of the most seminal images of female power ever created, and Warhol's impression of Queen as both glamorous and commanding. Featuring in the exhibition, which runs from May the 28th to June the 15th, will be key portraits of Mary the First, Mary the Second, Queen Anne, Queen Victoria, and Mary, Queen of Scots, lent from aristocratic and other British collections. The auction house is also holding a British art, the Jubilee Auction, on June the 29th. It will include pieces by Turner, Gainsborough, Barbara Hepworth, Lucian Freud, David Hockney, Bridget Riley, and Banksy. A new work of the Queen donated by artist Chris Levine will also be for sale, with proceeds benefiting the Platinum Jubilee pageant. Entitled Likeness of Being, it depicts the monarch with her eyes closed and was based on Levine's 2004 portrait of the Queen, marking 800 years of allegiance to the crown by the island of Jersey. It is expected to fetch between £100,000 and £150,000. The Jubilee Arts Festival at Sotheby's, 34 to 35 New Bond Street in London, will run from May the 28th to June the 15th. Entry is free and tickets can be booked in advance. Other activities include historical talks, musical performances, and a family day. More information can be found at www.sotheby's.com/jubilee.
Jubilee Vehicle Convoy Across Hampshire, one of Hampshire's largest summer events, is coinciding with the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Month and Armed Forces Day. Billed as a day of celebration, a convoy of classic military vehicles will travel from Southwark House near Fareham to Milestone's Living History Museum in Basingstoke. The 37-mile route includes a stopover at Lasham Airfield near Alton, which will take approximately 2 hours, travelling through communities including Droxford, Privet and Farringdon. Building on the success of a similar event in 2019 to recognise the 75th anniversary of D-Day, this year's convoy will feature a salute to the veterans. The event organisers have hired a vintage coach and are offering seats to veterans who would like to travel with the convoy. Arrangements are being made for salutes to be taken by local dignitaries in Wickham, West Meon, Alton and Basingstoke. The convoy will be flagged off from Southwark House near Fareham at 10 a.m. on the morning of June the 25th by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, with safety vehicles in place and supported by riders of the Royal British Legion Riders Branch. It will make its way via the B2177, the A32, A31, B3349 and finally the A339 to its destination, arriving at midday. A free family event, which is open to visitors between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m, is being organised by the Military Vehicle Trust to welcome the convoy on the showground adjacent to Milestones Museum. The Trust is planning various displays and activities, plus music from the Gordon School Pipes and Drums and the Odeon Military Wives Choir and the Osprey Roadshow. The veterans will have a guided tour of the museum and refreshments courtesy of Hampshire Cultural Trust. There will be a fundraising on the day for the Royal British Legion Riders Branch. A spokesman said, "This will be a day of celebration and reflection, the opportunity for communities to come together to cheer the veterans and to enjoy the unique spectacle of the convoy of vehicles on the road and then on to display in Basingstoke. We want to thank our supporters, Think, Ford and Southern Coupe, for their considerable help in making this event happen." Now, we've got five items of historical interest, starting with one from Roz, please.
Right, well, I've got Bowls Club Centenary, Winchester City Bowls Club. Winchester City Bowls Club are proud to announce that this year, 2022, is the club's centenary year. Formed in 1922, the club's bowls green were originally at North Walls, Winchester. Later in the 1950s, the club transferred to what was then the Winchester Conservative Club, Highfield Lodge, Worthy Lane. Now, no longer known as the Conservative Club, it is the Winchester Club, and the Bowls City Club is the sports section of the main club. To mark the centenary milestone of this club, the present Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Activell, will do the honours to open the green for the centenary season on May the 1st at 2 p.m. This will be followed by a club competition. The Bowls Club competes in the Southampton and District Men's and Ladies Leagues, as well as playing many inter-club friendlies with the visiting clubs from all over the country. Also, many annual club championships they've played. Club practice nights are mostly on Mondays, commencing at 6 p.m. Newcomers of any age and sex, experienced or beginners, are always most welcome.
Thank you, Richard.
Centenary of City Choral Festival. On September 20th, 1921, a music committee met at Winchester's Guild Hall. It included Dr. Prendergast, the cathedral organist, Dr. Sweeting of Winchester College's music department, Sir Hugh Allen, director of the Royal College of Music, conductor Adrian Bolt, and professional singer Stuart Wilson. Together, they established the Winchester and County Music Festival, modelled on the 1901-1906 Petersfield and Leith Hill festivals. Their formats consisted of daytime competitive classes, whose adjudicators then directed combined evening performances of pre-prepared classical works, accompanied by professional soloists and orchestras. The first festival took place on May the 31st and June the 1st, 1922, and in subsequent years, Adrian Bolt was to be followed as guest conductor by Malcolm Sargent, Sir Henry Wood, and composers Ralph Vaughan Williams and Dr. George Dyson. Eminent instrumental soloists included pianist Dame Myra Hess, oboist Leon Goossens, and cellist Beatrice Harrison. College and cathedral musicians continued to support this local initiative throughout the 20th century, and as chorister numbers expanded, both the cathedral and, from 1977, Romsey Abbey were used for the larger scale programmes. The festival has taken a strong and unprecedented hold in the county and is striking its roots deep into the musical soil of Hampshire. The 50th anniversary was marked on Thursday, March the 18th, 1971, when all the constituent choirs, totalling 350 voices, gathered in the cathedral for Bach's St Matthew Passion under guest conductor Mr, later Sir, David Wilcox, director of the Bach Choir. This year, for the centenary of the first festival concerts, seven choirs will combine in the Anvil Basingstoke for a mass performance of Handel's Messiah under the direction of the present Bach Choir conductor and former Winchester Cathedral organist, Dr. David Hill. Of the participating choirs, Compton and Shawford Festival Choir has sung in every festival since 1922. Winchester City Festival Choir and the present Itchen Valley Choir became involved from 1923 and were joined 2 years later by Botley and by Overton Choral Societies. Sarisbury took part in the 50th anniversary concert, and Twyford Singers, formed in 1974 by cathedral organist Alwyn Surplice, joined soon afterwards. The Centenary Messiah will feature soloists Alison Ponsford Hill, Simon Ponsford, Matthew Long and Jamie W. Hall, together with the Southern Sinfonia Orchestra. It starts in the Anvil Basingstoke at 7 p.m. on Sunday, May the 22nd.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
This is headed Art Exhibition Raising Money for Ukraine. An art exhibition with the natural environment at its core is to be held in Stockbridge, with a chunk of the proceeds being donated to help those in Ukraine. Opening on April the 25th at the Wickham Gallery, Invisible Landscapes presents new work by artist Edward Hutchison, which encourages us to deepen our connection with the natural environment. The exhibition, which brings together more than 30 paintings created by the artist over the past 2 years, will raise funds for the United Nations Refugee Agency's work in Ukraine, UNHCR. Moved by reports and images of the devastation which has occurred in the country following the Russian invasion, Hutchison has pledged to donate 50% of proceeds from all sales to support the UNHCR's aid efforts. Described by the artist as conversation pieces to prompt the urban world to take nature seriously, Hutchison's practice has evolved through many years of close observation, as he is also an acclaimed landscape architect. He's worked as a designer for many multidisciplinary projects, including the London Eye, the Indoor Cricket School at Lord's Cricket Ground, the Peace Garden and Herbert Gallery in Coventry, and the main square with the Mediathèque in Nîmes, France. For Hutchison, spending time in the landscape is where it must start. I find it essential to draw, paint, and physically experience the landscape in order to form thoughts firsthand, he said, describing how this can be a humbling experience. The exhibition, which runs until May the 4th, opens with drawings and paintings made outside, from settings which range from the Kent countryside to the Mani Peninsula in southern Greece. This leads to research which, for Hutchison, further inspires his practice. To develop a series of soft paintings, the artist carefully observed microbiological activity under a microscope, and the resulting pictures capture the extraordinary vivacity of this ordinarily unseen world. The Wood Wide Web, the discovery by Dr. Suzanne Simards of a network of tree roots and fungi that allows trees to talk to each other, is imagined as an intricate linear form, a complex circuit in calm tones. And in the vibrant series entitled The Dawn Chorus, Hutchison proposes that the symbiotic relationship between birds and plant life extends to the possibility of birdsong promoting plant growth, a theory suggested by research showing that the productivity of orange groves is increased if classical music is played in the early stages of growth. The chorus becomes a concert when Hutchison describes an effusion of wildflowers, and the delight and pleasure they evoke is captured in paintings, which, the artist says, are as much about the complex pattern of spaces between the rich mixture of plants as they are about the colours and shapes of the flowers.
Yeah, that was actually an item of what's on. I gave it to you in the wrong order. It's my fault.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Done.
My fault. Yes.
What a
interesting
thing to
item.
Read.
Yeah. Anyway, the next item is definitely an historical item because it's marked 1993 and it's a rave in the nave controversy. The rave in the nave raises roof. Winchester's cathedral's rave in the nave caused quite a stir. Between 800 and 900 youngsters danced to 3 Christian rock bands in a 4-hour rave on April 24th, 1993. No alcohol, apparently. The youngsters bopped away to the music of rock band Cross Reference and signed up for workshops on pastimes, including first aid, the Girls' Friendly Society, farming and scouting. Unfortunately, the local press couldn't report on the event much more at the time, as press access was limited due to an article in the Daily Mail, which accused Anglicans of pandering to debased taste and the spectacle of youth gyrating wantonly to brutal cacophony. In response, the late Canon Keith Walker, chairman of the organising committee, insisted to reporters, "You cannot report on any of this. Even if you have a ticket, you are not allowed in as a journalist." Right, well, now we have a letter from Westminster. This is from Steve Brine, who's the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Energy was a hot topic of discussion when COP26 President Alok Sharma came to Winchester for my latest Ask the Minister event. There will, I suspect, be countless long-term implications from Russia's illegal war in Ukraine, but energy security for the West is right up there. It also plays a central role in the road to net zero, and many constituents raise energy security with me. No wonder, given the cost of living pressures we're all feeling. My time in Parliament and government has given me a valuable insight to the trilemma we face between keeping the lights on, decarbonising and keeping bills down. With the Russian invasion, world energy prices have shot up. There's a sharpened focus on the security of supply and who we are happy to buy it from. Fortunately, we are in a much happier place than Germany, but we must work with our European friends to move collectively against reliance on Moscow. We need to look even more carefully at our current energy mix and how we can speed up the transition to more secure, sustainable yet affordable sources. Yet despite the UK being a world leader in offshore wind and decarbonising our electricity supply, we also need to keep the lights on when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. Of course, we want to supply with the lowest carbon impact, and that points towards the need for new nuclear to be part of the mix. The government's British Energy Security Strategy outlines how we will accelerate new wind, new nuclear, solar and hydrogen sources, plus support the production of domestic oil and gas in the medium term. The IPCC are clear some oil and gas is consistent with our carbon reduction aims, and we are using it anyway, only we're paying Putin for the privilege. The ambition of the new strategy is for around a quarter of our electricity to come from nuclear by 2030, with new projects centred around small modular reactors. This really is a sector where technology is our friend. Planning reforms will cut approval time for the new offshore wind farms, and consultation will allow new onshore facilities where local communities get the benefit, for instance, courtesy of lower bills. This new push will also increase our solar capacity and double the production of low-carbon hydrogen by 2030. Overall, a cleaner energy mix will move industry away from a reliance on fossil fuels, as we agreed at COP26 in Glasgow. It's easy to knock this new strategy, and there are some for whom it will never be enough. They know where they're coming from. I know where they're coming from, and we both know when it came to the last election, they didn't even turn up. As the young people at my Alex Sharma meeting showed, however, they're not interested in negative mindsets and tired thinking. They want solutions, and they're robustly sensible in how we get there. And that, as I say, was from Steve Brine, who's the MP for Winchester and Chalmers Ford. Now, a couple of sort of newsy items actually to do with the Winchester Talking newspaper. The first is a date for your diary. The Talking newspaper will have its annual AGM on Sunday the 8th of May 2022 at 2:30 p.m. And that will be held in our building where we record at the moment, in Unit 12, Whittle Valley Road, Winchester. That is SO23OLD. The AGM will be held first, and that will be followed by an afternoon tea. All listeners are invited to come along should they wish to. And it'll be interesting because it is, as I say, the building where we record the news. The other news item concerning the Talking News is that the Wanston Community Cafe have held a coffee morning, and as part of that coffee morning they raised a total of £380 for the Winchester Talking News. So that is very good news from them, and thank them very much indeed. Now, finally, before we get on to items of general news, I know you're all waiting for the lighting up times, so I won't make you wait any longer. The sun, if there is any, will rise shortly after 6 a.m. and set at around 8:15 p.m. So on with the general news. The first item from Ros, please.
Yes, this one. Oh dear, something affecting all of us. Police give fuel theft warnings. Police have issued a warning to Winchester residents about a rise in fuel thefts. Officers patrolling Winchester's rural areas have said thieves are targeting fuel canisters, garages, sheds, outhouses, which are typically used to power machineries such as lawnmowers. This comes as the squeeze on the households tightens as rapidly as rising food and fuel prices sent inflation to another 30-year high in March, even before energy bills were spiked. A spokesperson for Winchester Police said, "Unfortunately, we are seeing an increase in thefts, fuel thefts, with offenders mainly targeting fuel from canisters, from garages and from sheds, which can be used for machinery and lawnmowers. If you use fuel from any machinery, please check the locations where it is stored and make sure it is secure or more, if possible."
Thank you, Ros. Richard?
Parish councils challenge plans. Parish chiefs from across Winchester have met to discuss the additional housing numbers being imposed upon them by Winchester City Council. Representatives from Hursley, Compton and Shawford, Badger Farm, South Wanston, Oliver's Battery and Sparsholt discussed concerns with the local plan process as they are pressed to agree housing allocations by the end of the month. Hursley Parish Council Chairman David Killeen said, "We're concerned that the tight timetable is forcing parish councils to make a rushed decision to allocate another 300 houses by the end of April. This before we've seen any evidence from the City Council for housing need, or we have the final housing numbers from the deal with the Partnership of South Hampshire Authorities. We know that more than 3,000 houses are proposed across the district, with 1,600 already planned for the city centre and surrounds, and confirmed growth sites in Otterbourne, South Wanston and Sutton Scotney. We are all agreed that before any decisions are taken, we must have sufficient time to consult our residents. At the end of the meeting, the parish councils agreed to ask for an extension to the deadline to respond and to raise the following questions from the City Council strategic planning team. Firstly, why are there still unanswered questions about the opinion-based evidence included in the desktop settlement hierarchy table that allocated growth sites in three areas of the district? Why site visits to settlements have taken place without parish councils being informed, creating an issue of transparency around the process being followed? Why the City Council are so focused on building on green fields outside the city centre, given the need to produce local food, rather than working closely with all parishes to find brownfield sites locally, such as small areas of infill or unused agricultural buildings? With so many small settlements being proposed and the cost of building materials likely to increase, developers will reduce their infrastructure contributions to the council. So how will Winchester City Council finance the necessary investment in schools, roads, shops and healthcare, as well as provide much-needed affordable housing stock for local families? Parish councils are keen to help, but there are some very important issues that must be addressed before any decisions are taken. We hope Winchester City Council will listen, added Mr. Killeen.
Can Richard clear?
Councillor objects to McDonald's plan. A Winchester City Councillor has submitted a public objection to the plans for the city's first drive-through McDonald's. Councillor Sue Cook, who represents Golden Common and Twyford, is standing in the upcoming council elections. The plan is for the new restaurant to be part of the Tesco car park in Eastern Lane. Councillor Cook cited reasons such as increasing traffic and antisocial behaviour in her objection and called for the City Council to hear the application at a planning committee. Councillor Cook of Hewlett Close, Twyford, said, "As a Winchester City Councillor, I wish for this application to be heard and decided upon by the Winchester Planning Committee. This application would have an adverse effect on the residential area that is nearby, and it would also add to the congested Winnell Estate and the nearby junction that has daily traffic issues. Sadly, this theme of drive-through is known for its antisocial behaviour that it attracts, and with the nearby car park that looks to lose 80-plus car parking spaces and is a recipe for a disaster. Any motorist that travels on a day-to-day basis would surely not miss the unkept Tesco car park and the surrounding junction on the Winnell approach. Plus the verges and this drive-through would add to the vast amounts of litter that is discarded by regular users of the area." Another public objection from John Arthur of Western Road said, "It ignores planning guidance by failing to properly consider cyclists. The application name-checks cycling by mentioning the proximity of Sustrans Route NCN23, but does virtually nothing to facilitate the use of the restaurant by cyclists or to encourage people to visit by bike rather than by car." On the planning statement, it said, "The restaurant shall maintain a strict protocol for ensuring noise and disturbance is kept to a minimum. All shift managers shall receive conflict resolution training sufficient to ensure they can deal effectively with noise or antisocial behaviour. There are no allocated sites in the centre for a drive-through restaurant and no suitable sites. McDonald's have explored the city centre a number of times over recent years, and nothing is suitable or available. Much of the retail core is pedestrianised, with other areas being one way, restricting passing traffic. The planning application is available to view on Winchester City Council's planning website. The code for the building is 22/00230/FUL.
Claire, I've got an item which is headed Hundreds at Easter Monday Antiques Fair. More than 1,000 people attended an antiques fair in Winchester on Easter Monday. Grandma's Attic Antiques held the fair at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. Chris Brown, event organiser, said, "This event has been busier than the one on New Year's Day. We've probably had around 1,000 people. We used to be at River Park, where we had events for 30 years, but we love the new venue." Lynn Barnes of Delford Galleries said, "I love meeting the people who hopefully will buy my products. Because it's paintings I deal with, I don't feel they can be easily sold online. People need to physically see them." Wendy Clark of Art Decort said, "We come to this event in this venue on New Year's Day, and before that, we've done it for the last couple of years. Grandma's Attic Fair are good and very well run. The next antiques market will be on August the 29th at the same venue." Next one from Ros, please.
Yes, nice, happy, uplifting one. This is Spring Steam Gala on the Watercress Line returns. The Watercress Line's much-loved The Watercress Line's much-loved Spring Steam Gala is back on track this year, from Friday, April the 29th, to Monday, May the 2nd, with goods trains there. A range of heritage locomotives, from heavy goods to local freight, will be on show during the popular event, as well as fascinating tours and restoration exhibitions at the stations. Visitors will enjoy a journey into a bygone era with long home fleet and guest steam locomotives running along the Watercress Lines 10 miles throughout the 4 days. The Watercress Line's acting managing director, Alison Houghton, said, "Our much-loved heritage railway will spring into action for this four-day gala. Fan of steam railways are sure to have a great day out. The heritage good locomotives will make a nostalgic impression as they travel along the Watercress Line's famous route. There will be plenty to see and do at the picturesque stations, so don't miss out. Please book your tickets in advance. For information to book, please visit www.watercressline.co.uk. www.watercressline.co.uk.
Was Richard?
New role for Spring Watch presenter in Winchester. Winchester Science Centre is joining forces with the BBC Spring Watch presenter Megan McCubbin to help spark curiosity in the next generation of budding new stars. The new partnership sees Megan, a zoologist, conservationist, TV presenter and wildlife photographer, take up a new role as charity patron in a bid to engage more children in science, technology, engineering and maths, known as STEM, with a particular emphasis on nature. Megan visited the centre on Friday, April the 1st, to formally take up her new role as patron. While there, Megan joined a group of visiting school children in a nature-based activity and got to meet the team. As patron, She will raise awareness of the charity's work and support its mission to help improve life on Earth through STEM education. Ben Ward, Chief Executive of Winchester Science Centre, said Megan's passion for the environment and ability to share this enthusiasm through an engaging science communication makes her a perfect role model for children and families. Growing up in the South, Megan was a frequent visitor to the Science Centre as a child. During the lockdowns of 2020, she became a familiar face online and on TV, co-presenting alongside her stepfather, wildlife expert and BBC presenter Chris Packham. Isolating at their home in New Forest, they inspired people from all around the world to get closer to nature through their online bird-watching community, the Self-Isolating Bird Club, and later as co-presenters on BBC Spring Watch and Autumn Watch. She said, "Children are naturally curious. The Science Centre can help children harness that curiosity and learn about the world around them. By really getting to grips with the science behind things, they're going to feel empowered to do something productive and powerful. That really excites me." Winchester Science Centre has been at its current site in Winchester for 20 years, and the charity says it is now looking ahead with a new focus on environmental sustainability.
Claire?
House prices in Winchester. House prices dropped by 0.9%, more than the average for the southeast, in Winchester in February, new figures show. But the drop does not reverse the longer-term trend, which has seen property prices in the area achieve 13.2% annual growth. The average Winchester house price in February was £492,662. Land registry figures show a 0.9% decrease on January. Over the month, the picture was worse than that across the southeast, where prices decreased 0.3% and Winchester underperformed compared to the 0.5% rise for the UK as a whole. Over the last year, the average sale price of property in Winchester rose by £57,000, putting the area 22nd among the South East's 64 local authorities with price data for annual growth. The best annual growth in the region was in Lewes, where property prices increased on average by 20.7% to £410,000. At the other end of the scale, properties in Slough lost 1.3% of their value, giving an average price of £296,000.
Thank you, Claire. We have our last news item, and it's headed Police Helps to Solve the Mystery of, inverted commas, stolen car. Winchester Police helped reunite a member of the public with her stolen car last week, or so they thought. An elderly woman reported her car as stolen after the stomach-turning moment she and her husband returned to the car park, where she believed she had left the vehicle, which also had several of her belongings inside, only to find it was no longer there. The car was later located by police in a different car park, with all the items still inside, and reunited with its grateful owner. However, after conducting further inquiries, officers discovered the car had in fact not been stolen. The woman had simply got confused and returned to the wrong car park. Nonetheless, officers said they were pleased to have returned the vehicle to its rightful owner and have issued a further warning about leaving personal items unattended in parked vehicles. A spokesman for Winchester Police said, "While she was lucky and all their items were still within the vehicle, we would like to remind everyone not to leave any valuables within your car when it is unattended. We hope you all have a good Easter weekend." There, well, that concludes our news items for this week. Before we go, just another reminder that Liz Legrees is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. A contact number again is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Well, thanks to all the support teams here at Winchester Talking Newspaper for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers. Roz?
Goodbye.
Richard?
Goodbye.
And Claire?
Bye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye. Would you, before we finish, would you please remember to put the memory stick in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as you finish with it. Thank you.